Hello, and welcome to episode number 104 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Beginning with the revelations that arose in a now famous 2017 New York Times article titled Glowing Auras and Black Money, the Pentagon's Mysterious UFO Program, and further brought to light with the allegations made by former military insiders like Luis Elizondo and David Grush, the general public is being slowly acclimated to a reality that those of us who are part of this community have long known to be the case. Non-human intelligences and their technological marvels have been and continue to be in our very midst. Still, for those of us who regularly dive deep into these murky but often exhilarating waters, we know that these revelations, as startling as they are to the average Joe and Jane on the street, are really just the beginning. And that's because, simply put, there are numerous elements of human experience that simply don't play well with the prevailing paradigm that rules in Western civilization, at least at present. These elements include out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, psi phenomena, synchronicity, contact with supposed deceased loved ones, and time slippages. And that's just for starters. Not only do these elements that have historically been forced to the fringes of polite conversation stretch the mainstream's understanding of what's possible, they also call into question the very maps we've so confidently crafted to make sense of what's real altogether. For instance, when it comes to the matter of dealing with the sophisticated, apparently non-human intelligences, i.e. aliens, not only do we have the matter of the DOD allegedly housing the recovered craft and even the cadavers of non-human life forms that are decidedly biological, just like us. Also on the table are the credible accounts of a host of other kinds of non-conventional encounters. Truth be told, there is a considerable body of data pointing to encounters with beings that are better described as ethereal, though importantly, no less real. These beings are described by people from different walks of life in such consistent ways that they seem to claim just as much quote-unquote real and independent existence as we do. Other life forms that people encounter are perhaps better described as quasi-physical, and still others seem to navigate between these different domains like we might move through different rooms of a house. Furthermore, human beings sometimes find themselves acting outside of their own bodies and even outside of this 3D, quote-unquote, physical construct altogether, interacting with alien beings of various sorts, and sometimes even with their own supposedly deceased loved ones in the process. The beings encountered also seem capable of moving human consciousness in ways that sometimes include the physical body and other times do not. In short, what's being highlighted here is the untenable nature of the physicalist paradigm altogether. But all this being the case, how are we to proceed? If our modern maps have been exposed as, at best, approximations reflecting only one tiny corner of a much more expansive territory, how are we to make our way forward? And how can we reconcile the seemingly illusory boundaries between the living and the dead, sleep and waking states, and physical and ethereal realms? This all amounts to some pretty ambitious inquiry. But these are exactly the matters we'll seek to engage with in this, the 104th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's episode, I'd just like to remind everyone that if you would like to support this podcast and my work in general, and in so doing gain access to all of my content, which includes not just Point of Convergence and Liminal Frames and Event Horizon, as well as the various feature series I create, live Q&As, and OTC Squared, as well as early access and discounts to my various online classes and in-person retreats, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. All right, with that preamble aside, let's jump into today's topic. Today we're going to explore how a spectrum of beings experienced across a range of consciousness states helps us to understand not just the phenomenon, but the nature of reality itself. Now, on previous episodes, I've sometimes commented on the fact that Some episodes are meant to zoom in on this topic and others meant to zoom out. What I mean by that is there's times where it makes sense to take a particular encounter or experience that someone has recounted or a group of people have recounted and zoom in on the details so we can add that to our overall understanding of this topic. On other occasions, it makes sense to zoom back out and look in totality at all of the data we have amassed over time across all of these different kinds of encounters and experiences and see what we can garner from that overarching perspective, that so-called 30,000-foot view. And importantly, as I mentioned at the outset there in the introduction, while we are on the verge of having the mainstream, in other words, government and political sets, finally acknowledge the fact that we are not alone and that apparently non-human intelligences are here, have been here, and are interacting with us and have been interacting with us, that is still just the tip of the iceberg. There are many kinds of human experiences that don't fit well within the current prevailing paradigm of physicalism or reductionistic materialism. And I would argue, and I have been arguing ever since the beginning of Point of Convergence, again, even the very title of the podcast relates to this, we have to consider all of this data to make sense of things. And this is not just about understanding the phenomenon or the so-called UFO phenomenon, but understanding reality itself, what's really going on. And that involves questions around not just who they are, but also who we are. And of course, the nature of the fabric of reality itself. How is this all stitched together? We have some really compelling data pointing in certain directions, and we're going to explore some of that today from this zoomed out 30,000-foot view. One of the revelations that has arisen in quantum physics is this notion that we should avoid hardline distinctions or hardline divisions between different aspects of reality, because as we zoom in really, really closely, we actually find that things get blurry. In other words, we think we can divide things up into separate objects, and that's, of course, how we navigate and perceive the world. But when we look really closely at the quantum scale, we realize that these things are somehow connected. And of course, you have notions like entanglement that point to the fact that even beyond that, when you have elements on opposite ends of the cosmos, you could still see that they are connected. In fact, we do see that. And this again points to the fact that everything is connected. In fact, everything is one thing. So that's one thing to keep in mind today, that it does not serve us well to make distinctions that are hard and fast. That what we actually find when we examine reality closely, and of course, our ancient spiritual traditions, especially Eastern cosmologies, already pointed in this direction thousands of years ago. When we look really closely, we find that, if anything, there's porous boundaries between different aspects of reality, and that everything is somehow connected, so there's bleed-through. So it can be helpful to establish different categories of beings, different categories of existence and experience, but we should also keep in mind, overarchingly, that these all bleed together and, taken in total, actually represent one spectrum. So keep that in mind as we move forward. Now, something else that has proven as a revelation that we should keep in mind here is that different kinds of truths should all have a role to play here. That rather than looking at science and saying only scientific evidence counts and anything that has to do with subjective spiritual experience amongst people and human groups across time should be excluded, we want to go beyond that. We want to offer a model that somehow takes in all different kinds of experience expressed across time by different people groups, all point to different kinds of truths, and that all of these have a place at the table when we try to stitch this together in one comprehensive, overarching model of reality. Now, this has become second nature for me because I studied under Ken Wilber, and integral theory was a big part of my background. And this was central to those notions, that we actually have to try to take all these different truth sets and see how they can work together, how they can be complementary rather than set up in kind of an adversarial either-or, zero-sum game, winner-takes-all kind of perspective. So who was Ken Wilber? Some of you will not be familiar with him, some of you will. So let me just give a bit of a background on Ken Wilber. He's a contemporary American philosopher known for his work in developing an integral theory that seeks to harmonize and integrate diverse fields of knowledge. His aim has been to create a comprehensive map of human experience that encompasses insights from both modern science and ancient spiritual traditions. This will sound familiar to you at this point. Wilbur's integral theory is a framework that seeks to include and integrate all aspects of human knowledge and experience. It is often depicted through his AQUIL, All Quadrants, All Levels model, which incorporates multiple dimensions of reality. Wilbur's framework does not dismiss any particular field, but rather seeks to incorporate scientific discoveries and methodologies alongside the wisdom and practices of ancient spiritual traditions. He argues that both realms offer valuable insights into the nature of reality and human experience. And as an aside here, I quickly want to point out that people like John Mack went on that same kind of quest and found that while he had come from Western scientific background, he found that it was through shamans and indigenous cultures that he began to open up to aspects of human experience and therefore of reality itself that made better sense of the UFO phenomenon than some of his prevailing Western perspective did. Now, getting back to Wilbur, Wilbur's work spans across disciplines such as psychology, philosophy, sociology, anthropology, and spirituality. By integrating these fields, he aims to provide a more holistic understanding of human existence. Now, Ken was famous for saying this one particular quote. He said, quote, "I have one major rule. Everybody is right. More specifically, everybody, including me, has some important pieces of truth, and all of these pieces need to be honored, cherished, and included in a more gracious, spacious, and compassionate embrace," unquote. So this is the key here. What Ken recognized was that even when some notions adopted in some indigenous cultures, for instance, seemed to fly in the face of modern science, he didn't just conclude that they were just wrong and needed to update their perspective. He assumed that they were capturing some element of reality that was escaping the attention of modern science, largely because, again, science had begun to see their map of the world as the territory. And another thing that Ken is famous for saying is that we should not mistake the map for the territory. And yet that's precisely what reductionistic materialists have done, what physicalists have done. They map a certain corner of reality in predictable ways that seem safe and secure, and then assume this is all that counts, that everything else that falls outside of those somehow just isn't real, just doesn't count. Now, as we just said a minute ago, we should recognize that some of the distinctions we draw, some of the hard lines, some of the barriers or boundaries or borders that we draw in our conceptions, again, in our maps, suggest that certain kinds of realities shouldn't interrelate, shouldn't interpenetrate. And yet one of the most common elements of the UFO phenomenon that is so confounding to so many people is that it seems to bleed between these different boundaries, that it seems to ignore and not respect these borders that we assume actually represent the way things really are. In other words, really represent the territory. But again, we're finding that this only is true to the map, not to what we find in reality. So let's talk about a few examples. One right off the bat that is shocking to many, many people, and they're not expecting to run into it when they get into the UFO phenomenon, because again, most people, or many people anyway, get in because of the nuts and bolts kind of technological sci-fi curiosity. But then they find out that somehow the living and the dead and the delineation between those two categories seems to be not just crossed, but sometimes obliterated by experience of this phenomenon. This includes things like gray aliens showing up right alongside their deceased loved ones. Now, again, I've heard some people claim that this could just be a trick by the grays, that these actually aren't our deceased loved ones. And yet we seem to see evidence that the people involved are convinced these are their loved ones, partly because of the kind of relationship they feel, the kind of energy they feel, the kind of information that's shared between the people, the deceased loved ones, supposedly, and the still living, etc. So somehow it seems that these grays and these different kinds of beings are not delineated by these borders the same way that we are. Now, generally speaking, at this point, we don't generally have the capacity to be able to speak with our deceased loved ones. And yet even there, we know there is plenty of data from practices like mediumship where people are able to speak through one of these people and make contact with one of their deceased loved ones. Now here, some people might cry foul and say, listen, it's already a lot to believe in aliens coming from Alpha Centauri. You're asking me to believe in mediumship and the fact that some people can act as ambassadors between the living and the dead. That's just a bridge too far. But that's really the wrong way of looking at it, Because as I said in the introduction, and as I have been saying on many podcasts for many months and months now, what this data demonstrates is that the physicalist model itself is untenable. It doesn't just have a few holes. It has been blown apart by the evidence. And once we start considering reality from a different perspective, from something like idealism, something like that these different boundaries, these different borders are porous, and that these hardline distinctions do not really exist, that space-time does not really exist. Once you start adopting that kind of perspective, then all of these other elements become kind of intuitive, actually, that we would be able to speak to the dead, because again, that would more be like speaking to people now operating under a different bandwidth of frequency than we do. But they're not fundamentally any different than we are, because again, physicality itself is just a modulation of consciousness. So when our bodies deteriorate and die, our consciousness, which is non-local and not tied to the body itself, goes on in the same way that a radio wave doesn't die when we take a sledgehammer to a radio. Another example of a kind of experience reported by human beings that is rejected by physicalists is the shamanistic practice, where shamans go into a meditative kind of state and journey to a different kind of consciousness state, or a different realm, you could argue. Again, those are kind of two ways of describing the same underlying reality, in order to gain information from other kinds of beings that don't exist on this plane, but do exist in parallel in those other planes. And those different kinds of beings or guides are able to provide information that the shaman is then able to turn into actionable intelligence in terms of the tribe finding food or finding shelter, those kinds of things, or even determining the future path of one of the tribe's people, because again, time is also illusory in terms of being a linear kind of progression. So once again, once we consider these things from this perspective, this becomes intuitive. This becomes something we would expect. And indeed, once you start looking at it from this perspective, you find even more evidence than you did before, because you have overcome your self-censoring way of experiencing reality and have returned, or at least have begun to return, to an experience of reality where you look to the territory itself rather than relying on your map of the world, rather than relying on your referential understanding of what is possible. It's amazing how much we block out when we refer to a map rather than the territory itself. And this is a lesson that any Westerner would do well to learn. In the introduction, I mentioned how we are slowly getting to the point where our government is acknowledging that non-human intelligences of a sophisticated nature are in our midst. And again, these are supposedly carbon-based life forms of which we have the cadavers in storage somewhere. Now, again, to the average person on the street, this might be really revelatory information. This might be a shock to the system. Probably will be, even though people do expect alien life to exist elsewhere in the galaxy, they're not really expecting it to be here. At least many people are not. So they will have to metabolize that reality. But of course, again, human experience goes well beyond just encountering supposedly alien beings on the physical plane. We have people I've already discussed in psychedelics, because when we think about the shamans, they will often use plant medicine, psychedelics, things like ayahuasca, which DMT is the active ingredient, in order to modulate their consciousness in such a way that they can traverse these boundaries, which again are porous, in order to visit these other kinds of beings that exist on a parallel plane and gain information about the plane they came from. So again, these bleed together. Now, another example of where we set up hardline distinctions is between sleep and waking states. So when we're asleep, we might dream about some person we've never met. We might dream about some sort of alien being and wake up and say, wow, what a dream. We almost never expect that that alien creature we encountered in the dream would somehow populate in physical reality, because again, we assume the dream world is just basically the machination of neurochemical activity in our brain while we're trying to restore ourselves through sleep. But once again, human experience does not support this notion. And to illustrate this point, I bring your attention to a case we discussed on this podcast of a man named Yossi Ronin, an Israeli man who was living in Los Angeles and had an encounter where he dreamed about these particular alien beings. He found them quite interesting, quite playful, quite pleasant. Then things took a different turn when he awoke, heard strange sounds in the front room of his apartment, and then found these same beings actually populating into physical reality in his waking state. And then, of course, he had a completely different physiological reaction, because when we're in sleep states, our fight or flight response is largely offline, and we actually seem to be open to and able to metabolize different kinds of information in a more expansive way than we can in our waking states, partly because we're not self-censoring and applying that kind of physicalist logic to our experience. So there are beings that even say they primarily communicate to us through dreams, because that's the best chance they have to get the kind of information they're trying to convey to us, because we have let down our filters either voluntarily or involuntarily. Now, again, the point here, though, in the Yossi Ronin case is that these beings can cross these domains, which, again, most importantly, doesn't point to them having some sort of super capacity that blows our expectations away, but rather that the nature of reality itself is such that these boundaries between these different domains are porous, that them being different domains altogether is somewhat illusory. This is the ultimate revelation here, and that we ourselves can travel to these different domains. And I would argue we actually already do. Every night when we dream, we are actually traveling with the astral body to different planes of existence, as well as sometimes picking up information from this plane of existence. Again, all of these distinctions, all of these delineations, all of these hardline borders end up being exposed as overlays rather than as indicative of reality itself. And this brings to mind another quote from Ken Wilber, where he said, quote, "The ultimate metaphysical secret, if we dare state it so simply, is that there are no boundaries in the universe. Boundaries are illusions, products not of reality, but of the way we map and edit reality. And while it is fine to map out the territory, it is fatal to confuse the two." Unquote. Once again, making sure that we do not confuse the map for the territory. Maps are useful, but we should remember maps always reduce the complexity so as to make a certain journey more navigable. But we should remember that and not be fooled into thinking that somehow we're still capturing the totality. We are not. In fact, that's not what a map is even intended to do. So just then I spoke about how in dreams we are actually freed from some of the waking state filters that prevent us from experiencing more of reality. Now, here's another example that's very interesting. This has been documented even by people who still kind of tend towards a physicalist paradigm. I brought it before Eric Wargo, and he's made the point that he's seen demonstrable evidence in his own life because of a dream journal that he's kept really diligently over the decades, showing that he sometimes has precognitive dreams about his future. So what we seem to be noticing here is that in dreams, again, the filters are offline, which allow our consciousness to move about in such a way that a future event might occur right next to a previous event. And that these rules that apply supposedly in our waking state, although again, I would argue that's more because of the filters that are employed to help keep us alive, basically. So again, this comes back to evolution and what Donald Hoffman has suggested, that basically we have a reduced and translated reality interface that we make use of in our waking state. And that has allowed the species to propagate and has taken us to where we are now. But we should be clear not to mistake that dumbed down interface for a pipeline to truth, a pipeline into the ultimate nature of reality. And that, again, we're actually more likely to experience expansive visions of reality in a closer approximation to its totality in dream states and even in states where we are under the influence of psychedelics. And just to make this point crystal clear, again, that's not because the psychedelics are adding anything, but rather because they are merely taking down the filters that prevent us from experiencing these other aspects during our usual waking states. In other words, there's a dampening effect of the filters and nothing else. What we're experiencing is the wild cosmos, and that's cosmos with a K, implying not just the outer reality, but also the rich diversity of our interiority and the many planes that can be accessed that way in a much more raw form. So if we return to this notion that what we're talking about here is different modulations of consciousness rather than distinctions that actually exist between the physical and the non-physical, for instance, we should also keep that in mind when we think about supposed augmentation that has been conducted at a genetic level on humans by some of these alien others. What I mean here is, in the same way that psychedelics is able to modulate consciousness in such a way that it opens us up to expanded reality states, these augmentations at a genetic level do something similar. And so, for instance, I'm aware of situations where human beings have had their genetics augmented, changed, edited by these beings, and are now able to, for instance, see gray aliens, the beings we call gray aliens, walking down the street in broad daylight in a busy metropolitan center when no one else can see them. So again, what this has done is it's modulated our consciousness state, made it more expansive, so the bandwidth is now broader and they can perceive elements that the average human cannot. And when they are in this more expanded state, they find that these beings are right in our midst. So when we talk about this question around, are they with us? Are they here amongst us as we speak? Of course they are. Although they're not always perceivable, this is a key distinction. And that these distinctions in general that we're talking about today, these boundaries, really are more about that. What is perceivable? What is the range of perception versus what is ultimately real and ultimately distinct, divided, separate, etc.? Now, so far, we've been talking about the experience of different human beings encountering these different kinds of entities in different kinds of states or realms, which, again, we're just looking at like a different modulation of consciousness because that's ultimately what it is, and that our physical realm is, again, just one particular modulation, and the appearance of physicality, the feeling of physicality, the visceral nature of the physicality is exactly what we would expect in a fully immersive mental state. But we shouldn't make the mistake of assuming that appearance of physicality is actually speaking about something fundamental, not just of that modulation of consciousness, but of the totality, which is, again, what reductionistic materialists would have us believe. Now, in addition to the experiences people have, we should also look to the messages that are so often conveyed by these beings to us, to human beings, about the nature of reality itself, and even about our own nature, our own fundamental nature. What do they speak of? The very same thing I just pointed to, that being the fact that everything is ultimately connected, that these dividing lines are only artifacts of the maps that we create, not indicative of the underlying reality. They demonstrate this not just in their capacity to move around and across these domains, but also in the messages they provide to us. And very importantly, we shouldn't just believe it because that's what's being said to us. We should also compare that with people's experience when they have these more expanded realm kind of encounters. And what we find is that those are always one-to-one, that this completely fits with people's experience. And this is why we see such compelling evidence in the kind of worldview shifts that happen for people who've had these kinds of encounters. They often come back, as I've said many times, no longer fearing death, no longer being interested in material goods, being much more focused on the broad sweep of this incarnation amongst a much larger sense of self that is connected to other selves as well. So we see this both, again, in experience and in the messages and in the way that those interrelate in people's experience. And as a quick example here, again, from a case that I've covered over the course of this podcast, there was an encounter where these two young adults, they were late teenagers basically, who were parents of a newborn, were taken aboard a craft. And then afterwards, as they were leaving, even though there was ontological shock involved, as is often the case, they had this profound experience, specifically the young man who had been in the military and was a pretty straight and narrow, just the facts, ma'am, kind of guy. But this being, this other alien being, came out of its body and became a dancing sphere of light in front of this couple. And then this being was able to draw this man out of his body. And then these two spheres of light proceeded to kind of join together in this kind of cosmic dance in the same way that we might eventually see the Andromeda galaxy and the Milky Way galaxy begin to dance around each other when their gravities pull them together. Something like that. And in this experience, this young man said that it changed his entire perspective, that it was the most profound experience of his life and undoubtedly thoroughly changed his perspective on what his waking state was and just what a tiny microcosm of the totality available to him and to every conscious being that represented. Now, thus far in this episode, we've been talking about the distinction between the map and the territory, and how we shouldn't confuse one for the other. Now, this also comes down to our understanding of the possibilities we put on the table to make sense of the UFO phenomenon. And this relates to something I posted to social media this last week. I said, quote, "A thought. Beings can arise from outside of this construct and still not be, quote-unquote, ultimate forms, as in angels and demons from some supremely overarching plane. We need to be careful not to let a poverty of imagination and enduring but unproven assumptions rule the day," unquote. So this again gets to the map versus the territory. We look to our maps, our pre-existing maps, to make sense of this new terrain that we're coming across, assuming that our maps are sufficient to answer those kinds of questions. But the thing is, we already have empirical data that's been building up over millennia suggesting that that map, this map that tries to make sense of the possibilities metaphysically, is insufficient, is woefully insufficient. And here I'm referring to the difference between a truly non-dual understanding, a transpersonal understanding, and the notions that give rise to the thoughts and the structures and the dogma and the doctrine within monotheistic traditions. And what I'm saying here is that the data we have at hand seems to point towards a non-dual reality, that there is a fractal aspect to reality and a holographic aspect to reality that speaks to the fact that fundamentally we are not only all the same thing, but also fractal shards of the totality in our individuality, which seems paradoxical, but is the nature of reality itself, that just like with a hologram, you can take a tiny shard of a hologram, shine a light through it, and you will see not a tiny part of the whole, as you might expect, but actually the whole itself, a rendering of the totality, even if with slightly less resolution. And this is precisely why we can learn just as much by exploring our rich interiority as we can by exploring the cosmos, because ultimately those are fragments, fractal fragments of the same holographic whole, representing not tiny pieces, but renderings of the entirety, of the totality. And just like in nature, where we see these fractals repeating, these patterns repeating across various aspects of nature, this is also the case across the rich diversity of everything that is, that we might call the spectroverse. And the reason that's relevant in light of the quote I read a few minutes ago that I posted to social media this week is that this flies in the face of the notion that reality can be broken up into this dualistic picture where we have God and Satan with angels and demons in one particular domain, this supremely overarching spiritual domain, and then human beings and the animals and the plant species and the trees and whatnot on planet Earth on a different level, and that those two are ultimately distinct and somehow indicative of the total of what's available, what's represented in reality. This is what I'm speaking about when I raise concerns about a poverty of imagination and how we are just looking to the existing maps to try to make sense of a phenomenon that is part of a data set that is clearly obliterating our maps, making clear that our maps are insufficient. So rather than try to force a round peg into a square hole, we should acknowledge what we're seeing here. We're seeing evidence suggesting that this dualistic notion is fundamentally flawed. And we should take this opportunity to redraw our maps. And even as we do so, to do so in a preliminary, open-hearted, open-minded way, knowing that as we learn more, as we explore more, we will inevitably find even more accurate maps to describe the totality. Now, speaking of how our maps play a fundamental role in how we grok reality itself, I want to bring our attention to the fact that many people have recently pointed to the Vatican as perhaps being the one body in the world that has more evidence, more data around the phenomenon than any other. And this has a lot to do with just how long the Vatican's been around and how the Vatican Archives has access to data going back centuries and centuries, even millennia. All that's true. But what I want to point out to people is that There's a difference between having data and having the accurate interpretation of that data. Now, again, speaking of dualistic tendencies, the Catholic Church is very much wrapped up in this particular way of representing reality. So just because the Vatican archives might have great information pertaining to orbs that have shown up in history and beings that have shown up in history, that doesn't mean that they have an accurate understanding of what that represented. In fact, based on the way that organization understands reality and understands its role as an agent of God within that reality, this is going to fundamentally, I would argue, skew how they interpret that data. And it's not because they are not well-meaning. They are, at least for the most part, especially in this particular case, pertaining to this matter. But again, when we confuse our map for the territory, this is what happens. We inevitably do this bait and switch, and we do it somewhat unconsciously. And I would say that's exactly what we would expect from the Vatican. So while we should champion getting access to this data, we should be cautious about putting too much weight in their interpretation of said data. I now want to return to this notion of fractals, to the fractal structure of reality itself. What's implicit here is not just the fact that there are different layers of reality that are fractal representations of each other, but also that we ourselves have fractal structure. What I mean by that is that the way that we identify ourselves as this body-mind, as we say in Buddhism, this body with this mind born to these parents in this part of the world at this time in history, that's actually just one fractal within a chain of fractals. So again, this is why this is so interesting, because while as a society we're trying to reckon with the fact that there may be other beings that are sophisticated and intelligent, perhaps more so than us, that are in our midst and how this changes our understanding of reality, that, as I said at the outset, is just the tip of the iceberg, because we are as much a mystery as these beings are, and our true nature has been as elusive as their ultimate nature, especially under the rubric ascribed under reductionistic materialism or physicalism. As I've been saying for a long time now, and as these beings have been saying for a long time now, and as this data set that is the experiencer literature points to time and time again, we ourselves are multidimensional beings. So it's not just that these others are coming from other realms that we might call other dimensions, but we have existence across different dimensions too. And indeed, I would suggest to you that this particular body-mind that we identify with, this ego that we identify with, is just one fractal within a larger fractal, a larger aspect of you, which some people call their higher self. I would call this the oversoul, and that we have different expressions of that oversoul in different iterations we call incarnations, and the life experience we rack up and the lessons we learn gets passed up that chain to this larger fractal structure that I call the oversoul. And this is true of these other beings as well. And that above those fractals, there are other fractals where different oversouls come together in some even more overarching structure, in the same way that the cells of our body join together within our harmonized identity as a human being. Now, ultimately, and here's the real kicker, you can follow that fractal chain all the way back up to source, to the underlying undifferentiated consciousness that gives rise to all manifestation. And that furthermore, not only does the chain go back to that undifferentiated original source, but that, as we discussed before with the holographic nature of reality, each of the fractals within that fractal chain is itself a representation of the whole. And that brings to mind another quote from Ken Wilber when he said, quote, "Let's not forget that what is looking out of your eyes and hearing with your ears right now is already spirit, and that spirit, that I am-ness, is always present in all sentient beings," unquote. And again, the key there is that that's not just true for human beings, it's true for animals, it's true for plant consciousness, it's true for each of these alien others that exist amongst this network of fractals. So let's keep in mind, no hard lines or distinctions, no ultimate divisions, where boundaries are porous and ultimately everything is connected. That brings to mind yet another quote from Ken Wilber when he said, quote, boundary lines of any type are never found in the real world itself, but only in the imagination of the map makers, unquote. Now, of course, in addition to re-enchanting reality, and in addition to creating a much more robust, rich understanding of what is possible, what is ultimately real, there are other reasons why these messages given by these others and evidenced in reality itself, if we will pay attention and look away from our maps and back to the territory, is supremely relevant here and relates to the fact that this has everything to do with the challenges we are presently facing as a civilization. It's the illusion of separation, these distinctions that we assume exist, not just between ourselves and our higher selves, but even between each other, that is causing so many of the problems in the world because fundamentally, as I've been saying for a while now, we are out of alignment with the way things really are, and things never go so well when that is your configuration. And one more final quote from Ken Wilber that speaks to the fact that this perspective shift can help us address all the challenges we are presently facing. Quote, "In other words, the real problem is not exterior. The real problem is interior. The real problem is how to get people to internally transform from egocentric to sociocentric to world-centric consciousness, which is the only stance that can grasp the global dimensions of the problem in the first place, and thus the only stance that can freely, even eagerly, embrace global solutions." Unquote. And of course, that perspective, that understanding has everything to do with the impetus behind my Essence of Being initiative, that all of the problems in the world, both individual and collective, as daunting as they may seem, as intractable as they may appear, are ultimately rooted in illusions of perspective, not in the world itself. Although again, the key here is that our perspectives, the way we think about these things, does end up manifesting as physical reality. So we will create an unhealthy relationship with the planet if we continue to consider ourselves separate from the planet and from each other and from everything else. So when we consider the matters we discussed today from a more overarching perspective, it becomes clear that the revelations that have come to light via the UFO phenomenon are really just a few more breadcrumbs discovered upon the trail, along with other breadcrumbs arising from near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, encounters with supposedly deceased loved ones, etc., telling us that reality and ourselves, along with these various others, are not ultimately distinct, that we are part of a seamless whole represented in holographic fractal depth and breadth, and that that epiphany could serve not only as the bookmark of a new global perspective, but also as the inflection point that served to chart a new path forward at the very moment that we most direly needed it. And of course, speaking of non-duality, that seemingly perfect potential alignment between the boiling point of our collective problems and the pathway to a solution is neither purely coincidental nor unrelated. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.